from Romans chapter 8, verse 28, a familiar verse to many of you. It's a go-to verse for thousands of people, and it's very practical and insightful, and I hope it'll be helpful, and it'll be a part of a Testimony Tuesday on Monday today, as I'll formally introduce my special guest in just a moment, but reading from Romans chapter 8, verse 28. And we know that in all things God works for the good of those who know him, who have been called according to his purpose. That was Romans 8:28. Oh, magnify the Lord with me. Let us exalt his name together. It is Monday, January 15th, 2024. And as mentioned, it's going to be a Testimony Tuesday on Monday, because joining me in the studio all the way in from Bloomington, Illinois, is Dr. Philip Foster. He has a PhD. He's a licensed clinical psychologist, certified spiritual director, and director of development at Truth in Love Counseling. He serves in the Bloomington Normal area for over these past 15 years. Prior to that, he taught at Lincoln Christian University, where he directed the undergraduate psychology program for 11 years. And he has over 30 years of working in the people helping profession in private, public, church, and non-church settings. He was my special guest speaker for the Ministry Leaders Luncheon last Thursday, held the crowd, if you will, captive. He gave us a number of insights into having a greater 2024. And I'm not sure if we're going to go there yet, because you mentioned something during your opening remarks that God was doing a new work in your life after you left jail. And I was like, oh, I don't even know any of that story. And we haven't had any really show prep time. I got you into the studio here today, and I'm just getting to know you, but I appreciate the nuggets of truth that you shared with the guys about knowing God and how he can be accessible and known, and he loves us, and that can really motivate us. And you gave us a number of tips, but how about filling in some of your faith journey and life story, because I want to hear about how God moved in your life after leaving jail.
Okay. There's a way too long story leading up to that point, but I can start with, I was raised in church at least from the age of 7, and so I was familiar with the church and the Bible especially. I was taught from the Bible and Old Testament especially. I memorized a lot of scripture when I was a kid and all that. But I had some misunderstandings about my faith and what I expected of God. And so at some point, God failed to meet my expectations, mm-hmm. which I think is true for a lot of us. And so I walked away from the church. And when I did, I got into rather a wild crowd and made a lot of poor decisions, which included some drug use and some other things. At one point, I had helped someone to get some drugs. Now, I was not selling it, just helped him get it, but I was charged with selling and distribution. And actually, I faced 5 to 20 years in prison for that. Was able to plead down to a lesser charge. And so I only spent 75 days, enough, though, for God to get my attention again. I was convinced that that was not the life that I really wanted to live. Those were not the friends that I wanted to keep. And everything about that lifestyle just wasn't working for me. So when I got out of jail, and actually during jail, I was just talking to our ministers not too long ago when I made the presentation. One of them has a ministry in jail, and I was thanking him for what he did, because when I was in jail, there was a church group that came to the jail, and they allowed us to get out of our cells to attend the service. So I did that mainly just because I needed the entertainment, but also because it was familiar. They were singing songs that I knew and preaching from a Bible that I knew, and the people were very friendly. And I think God used that to remind me that he had something better than what I had been trying to do with my life. And so when I got out, I was blessed to have an aunt and uncle who said I could come and live with them. And they actually were going to a church that I had previously attended, so I started going back to church with them. And right away, started taking up again the church lifestyle, being a functioning Christian, and maybe not a strong believer again, but I knew how to play church, so I went through all the motions, and pretty soon people began to recognize that maybe it was more than just playing the motions. Maybe there was something genuine there. I didn't recognize it at first, but I got a lot of affirmation. They made me a leader of a youth and working with the youth, and they put me in charge of some other things, eventually became a deacon in the church. And at some point, my aunt came up to me and many others, and they said, you ought to go to Bible college. And I was working at a factory at the time. It was not my environment. I was a people person. I liked interacting with people. But running a furnace in a factory, I didn't get to see people for 8 hours at a time. And so I really wasn't happy with it, but I told her, I can't go to Bible college. I can't afford it. She says, well, I'll pay for it. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Well, okay, God has a way of opening doors even when we're somewhat reluctant. I thought I'd probably enjoy playing at a Bible college than working in a furnace. So I went to Bible college at Lincoln.
How old are you at this age?
I'm about 19.
Okay.
Yeah. And I was thinking, now, wait a minute. I don't like standing up in front of people and speaking. In fact, I'm scared of it. I had a terrible phobia about it. Flunked speech in high school because I wouldn't give a speech. But they required that I preach in two of my classes. So I, being a dutiful student, I actually did it, but I learned how to memorize. Mm-hmm. I would write out word for word my sermon, and I'd memorize it, rehearse it in my dorm room, and it was pure theater. So when I got up to speak, I just basically reiterated everything that I had taken in, and I got through it, and nobody ever complained. I always shook and sweated and was nervous throughout, but people kept up coming up and saying, hey, nice job, young man. And I'm like, are you serious? Okay, if you say so. But I kept doing it, and the more I did it, I got over it and eventually got to the place where I could speak in front of just about anybody.
But wasn't there a transition where you had another option or a ministry to go toward and you said, hey, I want to give up being in front of people?
Yeah, I didn't want to be a preacher. I knew that because okay. I actually went and spoke at one of my uncle's churches, and he came up afterwards and he said, you know, the church needs more teachers. Hmm. That was kind of a backwards way of saying, you're not a good preacher, but you give a nice talk.
Yeah.
And I knew that. I didn't have the charisma, the, you know, what some people have when they stand up and preach. But I liked to teach. I liked to educate. And so shortly into my program at Lincoln, they offered a new degree in family life ministry.
Okay.
And that really appealed to me because I liked working with people. I liked helping people. I was just drawn to people that were broken. So there was another door got open that I had no idea, but it was just perfect timing for me. I got into that program, and it led me into a long career of people helping in social service agencies, working for DCFS, working in group homes, and counseling, eventually almost exclusively counseling. At one point, I was speaking with one of my former professors at a wedding reception, and he said they had a position for someone to come and teach at Lincoln. And he offered it to me, and I was able to get it. And again, it was one of those, they had been interviewing someone else. That person decided at the last minute they didn't want it. Mm. And that's when I was at this wedding reception. My professor was there, and he says, well, do you want it? I said, sure. Mm-hmm. And so they hired me, and the other guy came back and said, I changed my mind. I want it. And they said, too bad. We already offered it to Bill.
Wow.
So I kept seeing God's hand in that. And the thing about it was, early on in my walk with Christ, the doors would open and they would lead to pleasant places, ones that I considered to be pleasant. And so it was easy to see this is God's will because I want it. Later on, I had to learn that God's will was not always what I wanted. But after many experiences like that, I learned to trust that God knew what was best. Mm-hmm. And that passage that you read in Romans 8:28, it gradually became a life principle for me. I learned to trust. And I wouldn't admit, of course, I don't always trust, but God promises to bring good out of situations for those. And I love the translation. Some say, for those who love him and are called according to his purpose. But the one you read, for those who know him. Mm-hmm. And when we really talk about our relationship with God, it's about knowing God. And so what I had to learn as I was going through all of this was, who is God? And how does God function? And what does he do? And why does he do it? And then I had to learn to trust, even when I don't know what God is doing. God says about himself in Psalm 62 that he is able and he is loving. And we need to learn how to trust him. And so I've learned to trust God, not just when things are going the way I want them to, but when things don't go the way I want them to, that God is still good. Mm-hmm. That God is still able, he's still loving, And he intends to bring good out of those situations. And I've seen it time and time again.
Now, when did God bring Roxanne into your life?
Well, Roxanne was a definite answer to prayer. Bible college, I won't go into my dating history, but there were a lot of women there that could have been ones I would have chosen. But at the time, going through Bible college, I was growing up. Mm-hmm. And so it wasn't until after I graduated, God opened the door for me to work at a state institution in Bloomington, and she was working there. And so we met, and gradually we got to know each other. And I don't think she was real impressed with me at mm-hmm. first, because I was coming out of a Bible college, and she thought I was going to be a preacher or something. And I didn't know too much about her to know about her faith at first. But over time, I found out, she is solid. She was mature. She was stable. Those were things that I didn't have growing up, and I hadn't really experienced much in my life. And so we began to see each other and to date, and I met her family. And so that would have been, I was about 25, I think, when we married. Mm-hmm. And we've been married now for 43 years.
Now, when you talked this last Thursday, I wrote down a few different notes. One of them was willingness versus willfulness.
Yeah.
And talk a little about that. And then another thing I wrote down, God shows up or God shows off. Did I write that right? I thought right. That was a
David
couple
Benner,
of fun.
Yeah, yeah. His book, Surrender to Love. The first one, it just being willful and versus being willing. The difference is when I first realized that I was going to serve God, mm-hmm. then I began to determine how I would do that. I was willful. Mm-hmm. I'm willful. I'll serve you, God. And so I began looking for opportunities, and I often found myself saying yes way too much to things that needed to be done, that I could do, but they weren't necessarily things God was asking me to do or leading me to do. And willingness is more a matter of let God lead. And that takes discernment, which basically, discernment is not just thinking about, but it's knowing God's mind. It's knowing God's heart and recognizing this is what God would have me to do. Not always what I want to do. Not always what I think is right to do. You know, in Isaiah 55, God says, my ways are higher than your ways. My thoughts are higher than your thoughts. And so willingness is me saying, I surrender. I don't want it to be about me and what I want. When Jesus is in the garden, and I shared with the group that we're familiar with the passage as it reads, not my will, but your will be done. But the word will can be translated as want. And Jesus, in essence, was saying, it's not about what I want. And that's the model for us. It ain't about me. It's about God. It's about what is going to bring God the greatest glory. Where can I serve, where I can use the gifts that God has entrusted to me? You know, we have the privilege that God entrusts us with gifts mm-hmm. and opportunities and relationships and so forth. It's a great privilege. And coming from where I came, like I said, my history before jail was marked by a lot of things. But no one would have looked at the way that I was raised and how I grew up as a child of an alcoholic, for example, that I would end up being able to do the things that I'm doing. And it's only because of the grace of God and my ability to just say, I will. Not I can, but I will, if you will, through me. Mm-hmm. And he has. And the more he does, the more I want to just surrender. I just want to give up more. Every day I try to think about what do I need to give up.
And you talked about when we understand the character of God, that he is able and that he is loving. And I'm thinking, Dr. Philip Foster, that there's a cross-section of people that are tuned in. Our 19 frequencies, we're between rock and roll stations, so there's people on all sorts of faith journeys, some that haven't begun, some that are maybe hostile to the gospel because they've never come to terms with that there is a loving God who cares. Mm-hmm. And you really fleshed that out. You really helped us all understand that not only is God loving, which is important for us all to recognize, but he is able. And so maybe talk a little about that.
Well, the God is able is sometimes how people come to know God. I mean, I looked at my life sitting there in a jail, and I realized, okay, I've messed up. I'm a real fan of the 12-step programs. Mm-hmm. And the first one is that we have to admit how powerless we are and how we have just created a mess of our lives. And if we can't have that kind of humility, then we really aren't going to have a relationship with God. I had to admit, my life was a mess. I didn't like it. And it wasn't because I wasn't capable of making decisions. I just knew that I could not find ways to be fulfilled, to feel significance, to feel loved. You know, the world offers us a lot of artificial types of things to replace those. But the genuine need that we have can only come from God and from the plan and the life that God wants for us. And so he is able to give us a life of significance and purpose and to give us a sense of value. I wrote a book, it's kind of my own self-story. It's called I'm Not Good Enough. And it was how I felt for many, many years, that I had to prove myself, that I had to earn my value, that I had to get people to like me or to give me a chance or whatever. I'm a pretty high-functioning individual with enough intelligence that I could be successful in a lot of things. And I'm not bragging. I'm just saying those are true. I did well in high school and college and so on. But even apart from that, I had other abilities. And I've never thought of myself as a failure in anything that I did. I just felt like whatever I did didn't really matter. It didn't accomplish what I really wanted to feel, which was, do I have value? Do I have significance? Is what I'm doing going to make a difference in any way? And it's only when I've entrusted my life to God and I've let him lead that I've ended up in places where what I did, I knew made a difference. Mm-hmm. I knew that it mattered. And it gave me a sense of worth and value, not just because of what I'm doing, but because I'm being who God created me to be. And people are all the time, Thomas Keating talks about, we create a false self to try to get people to like us or to get the approval that we need that we don't maybe get from our parents or from whoever. We tweak ourselves to match the crowds that we're in. That you'll accept me if I do this. You'll like me if I do that. Until we create this false self that we don't even know who we are. And people are always saying, well, I'm just trying to be mean. No, you're just trying to be what everybody else wants you to be.
Yeah. I like when you also pointed about God's love and how he pursues us, and greater love hath none than this, that he gave his one and only son, that while we were still sinners, God pursues us and loves us.
Yeah.
What would you say to that person that's tuning in, they're driving along and they're like, I don't know if I've ever experienced God's love. I had a terrible dad or a terrible father, and I just can't connect when people pray to Father God. What is that? That's a terrible thing to me.
Yeah. That is unfortunate. I had the same experiences growing up. I had to overcome my conception of what a God or a father would look like. Mm. It's coming to know the real God. It's experiencing God. One of the things that sometimes we're not really good about is helping people know God. Mm-hmm. You and I were talking about E.W. Tozer and the attributes of God. God is what he says he is, but too often we present to other people that he's some other version of himself than what he is. He is a loving God, and what you mentioned in just that one verse about while we were yet sinners, even before we were born, God loved us, and he offered his son for our sins so that we don't have to suffer the penalty of those. I don't deserve the grace of God. I don't deserve the love of God. I don't deserve to be called his child, but I am. Whether I want to be or not, I am his child. And everyone that is listening, we need to understand that our own self-rejection stands in the way of experiencing the greatest experience of our life, which is knowing we are children of God, that we have a real Father who genuinely loves us and wants what's best for us.
Now, I can't remember if it was this illustration or a different one, but you had talked about David having a heart like God's. And what was the one where you took that Greek course and you encouraged the pastors and ministry leaders to read different versions of the Bible? Because sometimes we're so familiar with the passage that we just read through it, whereas if we look at another version, it gets us thinking a little differently. But you said something about where David had a heart like God's. Yeah. Was that in that Greek, or was that?
Well, it's actually when you, and I'm not a Greek and Hebrew scholar, but I can read, and commentaries are out there. And I know a few people who can help me with translation too. But when it says that David is a man after God's own heart, many people understand that to mean that David had a heart like God's. Mm-hmm. Now, the only way to have a heart like God's is if you know God's heart, and then you aspire to let your heart be changed and to become like his. And so the book that I'm writing about that, it gets at what is it about our hearts that stands in the way. And it can be an anxious heart, a fearful heart. It can be a doubting heart. It can be a sinful heart, of course. It can be any number of heart conditions that we all experience that keeps us from knowing the heart that God has and the love that he has for us. We doubt it. We can't believe that he would want someone like us, or, you know. And so when we can begin to, as one of our other pastors shared, when we can just give it all to God. It's risky, but it's the only way to know God's heart is to say, it's just like if you're going to ask a girl to the dance, it's a risk. Right. She might not like you, but when you come to God and you say, okay, I want to take that risk. I want to surrender my heart to you. I want to know your heart and your will for me and the life that you want for me. I want to trust that it's what I need. God is faithful. God is always faithful. He will never reject us. He will never exclude us. He will never not love us. He made us. He created us. And he loves us.
In case you just tuned into today's broadcast, my special guest is Dr. Philip Foster. He serves as a licensed clinical psychologist, certified spiritual director, and the director of development at truthandlovecounseling.com. So you can find out more about his ministry work or contact him maybe to speak at your church or your large group. Or I know he does a lot of counseling with different pastors and couples. Find out more at truthandlovecounseling.com. truthandlovecounseling.com. And if you couldn't write that down, just call the station. We can give you all the information. Call us at 217-367-7777, 217-367-7777. If you missed a portion of today's broadcast, it is archived at greatnewsradio.org, also at wluj.org under the Mark and Friends tab. And so in our closing minute, Dr. Foster, what would you want to be a takeaway for the listener today? Maybe they're on their way to the work. Maybe they're retired. Maybe they're a shut-in sitting at home. What would be a nugget of truth that would be useful or maybe something that God would want them to know?
I think the thing we've talked about is the relationship with God. And the thing that I want people to experience is not just practicing a religion and going through the motions, but to actually know that God desires to have a relationship with us, a personal one, and that that relationship is where we can experience love, significance, value, and worth. And there's no real cost to that. It's just taking that risk and being willing to come before God, and you have nothing to offer anyway, so don't worry about bringing anything.
Yeah.
It's like being invited to someone's home for dinner and you don't have to bring dessert.
All right. And God is able, God is loving, and he cares for you. Find out more at truthinlovecounseling.com or give Dr. Philip Foster a call at 309-585-0241, 309-585-0241. Well, thanks for listening. Thanks for being a part of our radio listening family. This is Mark Burns with the Ministry of Great News Media. God bless you and have a great day and night.